Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. Did you know stress is a contributing factor for many conditions, including depression, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and even cancer? Unfortunately, stress is pretty unavoidable. It's a part of life, but did you know it can also be the key to your success? Our guest today, Dr. Steven Sidaroff, has spent over 40 years studying and perfecting a holistic approach that transforms stress into a powerful ally. In his groundbreaking book, The Nine Pillars of Resilience, he provides a comprehensive guide to help you thrive even during overwhelming stress. As we navigate through economical uncertainty, political turbulence, international conflict, and environmental challenges, his insights couldn't be more timely. If you want to conquer your stress, enhance your resilience, and improve your overall wellness and longevity, stay tuned. Dr. Sidaroff will help you prosper with stress rather than being weighed down by it. And it all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is an internationally acclaimed psychologist and expert in resilience, longevity, optimal performance, addiction, neurofeedback, and mental health. He serves as an associate professor in the departments of psychiatry and biobehavioral sciences and rheumatology at UCLA's Geffen School of Medicine. He's the founder and former clinical director of the Stress Strategies Program at UCLA Santa Monica Hospital, and he previously led the Moonview Treatment and Optimal Performance Center. In addition, he's pioneered innovative training and treatment protocols in optimal functioning and mind-body medicine across the entire world. He also hosts prominent summits on longevity, resilience, and leadership. His new book is called Nine Pillars of Resilience, The Proven Path to Master Stress, Slow Aging, and Increase Vitality. Welcome to the show, Dr. Steven Sidaroff.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Oh, so great to have you join us. You know, over the decades, I've interviewed experts on conditions that are no interest to many listeners. I mean, not everybody has arthritis, so they turn off the show on arthritis, diabetes, not interested. Dealing with memory loss, they tune it out. That's not relevant to them. But every single person listening right now is enduring stress to some degree. Share with us, what motivated you to focus on this common challenge?
Well, to begin with, because it's so common, but also I started my career in neuroscience. When I shifted into clinical, one of the things that stood out to me was that how stress was ubiquitous in our lives, and stress really is the factor that can make your life either good or bad, how you deal with it. It's a modulator. When I did work in addiction, I found that the more stress people had, the more craving they had, and the more vulnerable they were to relapse. But I find that with all of us, stress can really be the source of our pleasure and success, or it could be the source of our speeding up the aging process and the disease process, and even cognitive fog.
Yeah, so true. I know stress can be so subjective. What is a 1 to 10, a 2-level stress to me would be a 10 for somebody else, or vice versa. Given the tips on how people can put stress into perspective and prevent it from wreaking havoc on their mind and body.
Yes, certainly. And you bring up an important point that really relates to my fifth pillar of resilience, which is our mental mind-body approach, how we think about what goes on in our lives. So if you start your day and you're thinking, what can go wrong in my day? What's going to be my emergency, my problem? How am I going to deal with this? You're already triggering your stress response. But if you start your day thinking, hey, what's going to go well in my day? I'm looking forward to this, a different mindset, you will have much less, you'll be triggering less stress in your life. So mindset is a key ingredient, how we think about what's going on in our lives. And this also brings up our childhood experiences, because if we grow up in an environment as a child that is dangerous, where we can be judged and criticized, we learn that that's what we can expect when we become an adult. And so we will, as an adult, We will worry about other people's judgments, and that triggers stress. We will worry about whether we're going to do well, and that triggers stress. So our mindset and how we learn to approach the world really determines how much or little stress we experience in our lives.
Yeah, such a good point about mindset. I found that living by the mantra, if you can't change it, don't stress about it, has really reduced 80% of the stress in my life. Things like traffic, bad weather, flight being canceled, or maybe I got a coworker that has a bad attitude. I can't change their attitude. These things are out of my control. And I'll share, I recently saw a guy behind me in traffic slamming on his horn, cussing, screaming, face was red. All that stress didn't make the traffic move any faster. Plus, the consequences of that stress are significant. Could you share with us how stress can manifest in other areas of our health? This guy behind me, he's not going to live long, is he?
And we see those people all around us, people who I would say are emotionally reactive, that small things trigger big reactions in them. And, you know, it's interesting, when we notice that, that's a very good signal that you're sitting on unfinished emotional business. It's a signal that feelings such as anger and sadness that occur in all of our lives, and it's a natural part of our lives, but if we avoid dealing with those feelings, either because we don't think we know how to deal with them, or as you're referring to, things in our day, in our lives that we can't do anything about, for instance, a parent who isn't giving us the love that we need or want, those feelings build up inside of us, and then they get triggered like the guy in the car behind you. One of the very most important factors in staying in a place of balance is making sure that when you experience feelings, that you deal with them, you find a way to express them and then let them go. And to your other point, I commend you on being able to let go of all the things in your day and in your life that you don't have any control over. But most people allow those thoughts and those feelings to go around and around in their head and in their bodies, not being able to let go, even though, as you say, they don't have any control over them. So that's the other piece, and you highlighted it very well. And that's when you can't control something that's going on in your life, that you stop putting energy into whatever that is.
Awesome. And you know, while he was back there ticked off, I picked the phone up and said, hey, I got a time to call my mom. I'm in traffic. I used it wisely. Listen to a podcast or something, you know, just like, chill out. It's not going to change anything. But I love the word resilience. I love that you really portray that, as that's so important. And one of the most fascinating things, I want to share this with you, I learned in biology class, is that after a broken bone heals, it comes back 10 times stronger. And in fact, you're more likely to break a bone that has never experienced trauma than one that has healed and made a comeback. And I believe kind of life is like that. When we break, we heal, we come back stronger. How can people realize that stress gives us resilience in life?
Well, I think we go back to the mindset to start this part of the conversation. I encourage people to have what I refer to as a growth mindset. And with a growth mindset, when you're faced with a challenge, the goal is to embrace the challenge. The goal is to realize that really this is how stress can help us. When we embrace a challenge and we engage in the stressful behavior, the goal then is to learn the lesson that is shown as you experience that stress. And this is why I say that when people talk about resilience as the ability to bounce back, that actually is not the way we want to think about resilience. I like to think about resilience as us bouncing forward. And by bouncing forward, I mean that every time we encounter a stressful experience, as you note, with your body, you come back stronger. That's how you want to think in terms of stress. You want to come back stronger. You want to learn the lesson. If you deal with a stress, like a difficult situation, a test that's going to be a hard test, or a presentation that's going to be difficult, after it's over, what you want to hold on to is how you were able to handle it. Because you acknowledging And this is so important. You acknowledging your success, you acknowledging that whatever you brought to the table to handle that worked, that's what increases our capacity to deal with the next encounter, the next stress. But strangely enough, what happens with most people is what they remember, because they do it unconsciously, they remember how anxious they were leading up to the stressful experience, how they focus on how difficult it was, and what they carry on beyond that from that experience is the anxiety and the stress rather than the fact that they handled it. And so I encourage everybody, when you complete a stressful experience, acknowledge your success, because that's what's going to have you be more capable and feeling confident for the next one. And that reduces your stress and makes you more resilient.
Yeah, well said. As you were saying that, I was thinking of the CEOs of big corporations. They got their start in the mailroom and worked their way up and dealt with the stress of each department. They're a great CEO. They've dealt with all those stresses. It made them a better leader. Pop somebody into the CEO title and he hadn't had experience, he's stressed. That company's going to falter, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, let me ask you this. The big thing about stress, when people think about stress, they think about reaching for their best friend Ben and Jerry's advice, because stress spelled backwards is desserts. What should they do to combat this stress-fueled sweet tooth? Because everybody wants to reach for that ice cream when they're stressed. Any advice?
Yes. You know, if we think about the successes in our lives, I guarantee that most, if not all, have been associated with stress. If you have a big, any kind of important encounter, experience, test, presentation, it's going to be stressful. One of my early mentors, Donald Hebb, was the one who coined the phrase, neurons that fire together, wire together. And so in our brains, we've wired together stress and success. So on an unconscious level, we are actually motivated toward stressful experiences. But here's the key, and I like this is what is so important. And I like to say that there is a stress sweet spot. In other words, stress mobilizes us, helps us focus better. But when you push that level too far, that's when you have health issues and cognitive issues. So the goal is always to find your stress sweet spot, that level that feels just right. And so it's important to be paying attention to how your body feels, because when you engage in too much stressful behavior, your body just doesn't feel as good. You may feel vibration in your chest, tension in your belly, tension in your shoulders. So a key component of being resilient is paying attention to how your body feels and not simply accepting a symptom as, oh, you know, I have another headache, let me take an aspirin. No, why am I having these headaches? I'm having them because I'm spending too much time engaged in stressful behavior and not enough time in the recovery mode, triggering the parasympathetic recovery branch of the nervous system so that my body stays in balance.
Yeah, good point. Share your views on how doom and gloom news can create daily stress. Wouldn't turning off the news help people's stress level? It's hard to stay happy when you hear the world's on the brink of total destruction.
Yes, and you know, there's a fine line here, because if there's a reality that you're pushing to the side because you don't like it and you don't want to hear it, it's still going to affect you. But you're right. You want to limit how much time you engage in listening to what's going on around the world. In our hunter-gatherer days, we had maybe a cohort of 10, 15, 25 people in our small tribe that we knew what was going on with them. Now we know what's going on with 9 billion people around the world, and we have this information coming all the time. So we hear about a tragedy in India or the war in Ukraine. And so we have to consciously limit the time we spend listening to all of these things that can trigger our stress response. So you want to limit it, but you want to find a way to come to grips with what's going on, and be in a place of calm about it, which again goes back to your comment earlier. If I can't do anything about it, I have to find a way to let go and not continually let these sources of stress continually beat me up. I need to find a way to say, yes, that's going on, but right here, right now, I'm safe and I could let down my guard and I could relax, even though there are things going on around the world. It's a balance.
Yeah, it really is a balance. I remember going a few days feeling stressed and a bit on edge, and I realized I was listening to the news on the way to work, on the way back from work, and of course, during my lunch, I put on talk radio, and nothing good. It's always what the, if it bleeds, it leads. That's how the media works. It's got to be negative, and I switched to listening to music, and Doc, let me tell you, I immediately felt my stress level drop. It was amazing. What's your views on listening to music for calming the mind and cheering people up, and take it away from the news?
Yes, I think it's a great idea. You know, one of the ways that we all get stuck is we will hear something that's stressful, and then we may change the station or we leave our car where we were listening to that news that was creating the stress. But one thing that we forget to do is turn off a stress response after we leave the stressful situation. We're so used to activating ourselves to deal with stress, we don't put enough time, energy, or attention into paying attention to when the stress is over and we can now relax. So I encourage your audience to consider that you don't want to spend your day jumping from one stress to another to another. You want to stop periodically in your day and say, you know, for the next 15 minutes, I can let down my guard, I can relax and put my body into a recovery mode because I don't have an unlimited amount of personal energy. And yes, listening to music is a great way of going into a more calm state, particularly if you choose relaxing music. But I'm encouraging people, before you turn on the music or when you turn on the music, to remind yourself, okay, now I can relax. Now I could let down my guard. So we have to give the body permission in order to shift into that mode.
Yeah, I would imagine the same for social media. I've read some interesting studies showing how spending too much time on social media can contribute to stress and depression. So shouldn't people turn off their TikTok and go for a walk instead?
Again, our bodies have just a certain amount of what I refer to as personal energy. And we're always making choices. Should I send my energy into my muscles to prepare for a danger, for fight or flight? Or should I send my energy to my kidney so that my kidney can help purify my blood? And we're always making these choices between defend and protect, which is the stress mode, and heal and recovery, which is the bringing in the recovery mode. And so we need to find ways to have that balance.
That's so true. There's one word in your book that I personally believe is the epitome of resilience, and that word is purpose. I believe that is so important. Share with us, why is having a purpose so important to longevity, to reducing stress, to our health? Why is that one word so key?
Well, yes, it is. And it's actually part of my third pillar of resilience, which is relationship with something greater. And so the first pillar is relationship with yourself and having a good relationship with yourself. The second is relationship with others and actually being able to distinguish between healthy relationships and toxic relationships. And my third pillar includes spirituality, meaning, and purpose in life. And when you have a purpose in your life, you have a reason to wake up and get up in the morning. So it helps direct your attention and it helps to direct your focus and intention in something positive, something that brings you a sense of gratitude in your life and a sense of, I have something important to do. And when we have something important to do, we are more likely to embrace the day, which already reduces stress and increases resilience. I wrote an article recently for Psychology Today where I said that purpose may be the ultimate in use it or lose it, because literally, I believe we send a message right down to our cellular level that says, hey, I have to stay alive because I have an important purpose. And that message actually translates down into our mitochondria functioning better, our cells functioning better. Now, I don't know if there's any research that shows that, but I believe that that's what happens when we have a purpose in life. We're sending messages to our body. Life is precious and there's something important I need to do. Let's stay in the best health possible.
Yeah, so important. I interviewed William Shatner, who's 93 years old now. God, he's so filled with zest and vigor and vitality, loves life. And I said, what's your secret? He's horseback riding. He's writing books. In his night, he went to outer space. I mean, this guy's doing, I said, what's your secret? And he said, just what you said. I wake up with purpose. I schedule a charity event 3 months out. I can't die because they're counting on me. He said, the day that I don't have something scheduled that helps and gives back to others, I'll die. I love that. I get chills thinking about it because it was so profound. And that's how I relate. It was like, wow, this guy, I mean, there's 60-year-olds that walk around the block and this guy's riding horses. So there's something to it. I love that purpose. I really commend you for bringing that out there. That's great. Let me ask you this. Talk to us about something else. We talk about the Ben and Jerry's. Talk to us about alcohol, most people's go-to after they've had a stressful day. Do you advocate a glass or two of vino, or is this something that people should stay away from?
Let me talk to the broader category here of whether we engage in a process that facilitates our own self-balance and self-regulation. Practicing a relaxation exercise is training your own nervous system to have a better chance of being in a place of balance versus taking anything from the outside, whether it's a medication, whether it's alcohol, a drug. All of these are used to do what we are not willing to learn to do ourselves. So I think on a temporary basis, not everyday basis, to use a glass of wine to help you get into a calmer state, that's fine. But when you're using it as a crutch, when you need it to do what your body is no longer capable of doing, that's where we begin to get into trouble. We want to find ways that we can support, like with a regular meditation, a regular relaxation exercise, or biofeedback, a process that literally trains your nervous system to stay in a place where its two branches are in balance. That's the epitome of resilience. When we start to use external substances to do the job that we're sort of relinquishing, so to speak, that's where we start heading downhill.
Great answer. So if they're using the glass of wine as an eraser to try to erase the stress, that's not where they should be. And a lot of people do. I've seen people where they're stressed, you know, then I can't wait to go home and get my two glasses of wine. I'm like, you see, you're like, you're stressed and you're thinking of wine as your stress reliever. And that's, like you said, that's the wrong way to go and approach wine.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. One of the things I find with a lot of people is when I talk to them about becoming more resilient or dealing with their stress, while they say, yes, I do want that, they feel overwhelmed by all they feel like they need to do to become more resilient or to deal with stress. And that's one of the things I address in my book, because I realize people have a lot of resistance to dealing with their stress. And I say the path of resilience is alongside you every single day. It's right there. And all you need to do is take a few steps that puts you onto that path. And these are the steps I go into in my book. But you only have to take a few steps to get onto the path. And when you're on the path, you could say to yourself, I'm successful. I put myself on the path, rather than what many people feel like, well, success is way, way down the road, and I'm going to have to do all kinds of things before I can be resilient. No, with the growth mindset, Resilience is a daily engagement. Do a couple things that put you on the path, and you're on the road to success. You're on the road to greater resilience. But you have to take just a few steps every day. It's easy, but you have to be consistent with it.
So true. How do practices like gratitude, self-compassion, and forgiveness contribute to resilience and vitality?
Well, you know, it's interesting. If you and I, right now, were in the same room, and I monitored your brainwaves, I would be able to detect my heart rate pattern in your brainwaves, which is amazing, amazing. And that's because our heart rate pattern is so powerful that it can project into your brainwave pattern. When we go into a state of gratitude, we find that we have what's referred to as a coherent heart rate pattern, an optimal heart rate pattern where your heart rate goes up as you breathe in and goes down as you breathe out. And that facilitates health, that coherent heart rate pattern. And everybody in your audience can trigger this optimal heart rate pattern by going into a state of gratitude. The state of love and gratitude facilitates this optimal pattern. On the other hand, if you're frustrated, you're angry, you're resentful, and we look at your heart rate pattern, we will see a very chaotic heart rate pattern. So it's a beautiful illustration of how our emotions are reflected in the physiological functioning of our bodies. So the more we're in these positive emotional states, the more we encourage the body to go into its optimal state.
Good point. You know, I don't know if you pray or if listeners pray, but when I do, I start with gratitude. Most people just start with times are tough, pray for this, and they pray. No, be grateful for what you have, because so many people are looking at the front of their car, they look in the rearview mirror and go, wow, I'm healthy. Thank you for this. How? I mean, be gracious, gratitude for what you have and the health you have in your family, rather than, as you said, the doom and gloom, praying for what's wrong or what needs to be fixed. And that's just my view. I think you lead with gratitude. Same with, I would guess, meditation or other areas, correct?
Yes. And you bring up an interesting point, and that's that our survival mechanism, our evolutionary mechanism for survival, has us biased toward what might go wrong. And that's what kept us alive as hunter-gatherers, is to really scan the environment for what might go wrong so that we protect and take care of ourselves so we live long enough to procreate. But that bias is actually working against us today, because it does result in us spending more time looking for what can go wrong, spending more time with problems than giving ourselves the opportunity, as you just mentioned, to go into a state of gratitude, to appreciate all the things that we have. And, you know, you look at TV, you look at the radio and social media, they're always pointing out either the problem or they're pointing out stuff that we don't have. When we go into this comparison mode, oh, what do I need to do to get that beautiful car or that beautiful house? And all of those create more sources of stress. Not that you want to totally eliminate goals and striving. That's an important area of our lives. But we have to put everything in perspective. We want to be able to put the recovery of our body into that mix.
So true. I'm curious your opinion. What about these popular stress-relieving natural supplements called adaptogens? Are there any of these, in your opinion, worth trying?
I think the jury is still out on them. They may be shown to affect certain biochemical processes in the body, but I'm not aware of any good controlled studies that actually demonstrate that they're more effective than anything else in achieving those results.
So again, they've got to work internally, not rely on something that they're taking. And I agree with that. What about lack of energy? It's a big problem I hear. Focus and energy. Are there any tips you can offer to help people get a little more zig in their zag? That's so important with resiliency. Can't get resilient if you're laying on the couch potato.
Right. Well, one of the most common symptoms that people come to me with is fatigue, lack of energy. And if you, again, going back to the stress response, if you think about how when you're engaging the stress response, and by the way, our bodies go into the stress response whether the danger is real or whether it's imagined, whether it's just our interpretation that someone that has a frown on their face is angry with us. Well, maybe they just got up on the wrong side of the bed. There are many opportunities that trigger the stress response, which has this whole entire cascade of physiological and biochemical processes releasing cortisol throughout the body and essentially telling the body, go into a sprint, telling the body, get prepared to move, to fight. So it uses up the resources of our bodies. And that's why a lot of people come in to see me and tell me I'm fatigued, I'm tired all the time. And I look at their life, I look at their day, and I see they run from one stressful situation to another throughout their day. And so they're using up the resources of their body, making themselves tired without giving themselves the opportunity to recover. So it's another indication of how a key element of resilience is finding this balance. The other thing is that I talked earlier about finding your stress sweet spot. So within limits, our stress response does help us focus better, does help us mobilize for real stressful situations. But we have to find that stress sweet spot. We have to make sure we're not overshooting it. We're in a society where we talk about bigger is better. We're in a society where we supersize our food. And we have this concept that more is better. But when it comes to our stress and our stress response, that's not the case, because while a certain amount of stress will enhance focus and attention, when you go beyond that, one of the things that happens in the brain is that blood gets shunted from the cortex, in the prefrontal cortex, where our best thinking and focus occur, back to the more primitive survival centers of the brain to handle the danger. So we have to find that sweet spot where we perform at our best. I guarantee everybody that's listening to this intuitively understands my point. And I encourage you all to think in terms of where is my stress sweet spot, where I perform at my best and at the same time maintain my best health.
Well said. I was thinking as you're talking, the lack of energy and focus could also be they don't have a purpose. They don't have something to look forward to. You tell a kid, come on, honey, it's time to get up. We go to school. And he's like, I don't want to. Hey, honey, we're going to Disney World today. Boom, they're up. Wow, they're wide-eyed. So I think it has to do with purpose and excitement, have something to look forward to rather than like the doom and gloom news, the work that you don't like. Do something. And that even if it's 3 months out, have something to look forward to and give you purpose.
Yes.
Fantastic. Time flew by. I want to thank you so much for joining us. Great topic. The book is called The 9 Pillars of Resilience, The Proven Path to Master Stress, Slow Aging, and Increase Vitality. You can get your copy at drstevensideroff.com. And while there, be sure and sign up for his free resilience assessment. You'll discover the secrets to your personal and professional toughness. So you can fill that out and find that out for yourself. You can follow him on Facebook at Dr. Steven Sideroff, on Instagram at Dr. Steven Sideroff, and X, he's at Dr. Sideroff. And you can follow me on Facebook and X at Dr. David Friedman. On Instagram, I'm at Dr. D. Friedman. If you heard something today that someone you know needs to hear, I'm sure you did, a lot of stress out there, send him a link to this podcast. It's available to yourgoodhealthradio.com and radiomd.com, and peruse our podcast library and share these segments with interest, you know, for friends and family, coworkers, and on social media. We said stay off social media. This is something you want to throw out there. They need to see this information, read it, absorb it. This information is too important to keep to yourself. Sharing is caring. And you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio. And we got a lot more to come. Stay tuned and stress-free.